joining the Senate Labor Committee. I will note procedurally, we have something to take care of right now. Inadvertently, this afternoon, we tabled our bill, but then when we meant to recess, we inadvertently adjourned our hearing. So what we are going to do right now is we are going to have a new hearing starting right now. We rescheduled it. It is so this is officially a new hearing. And yeah, and so I am going to note that the Senate Labor Committee comes to order and is hereby called to order. I will note that a quorum is present. And thank you to those of us who noted the inadvertent procedural error and brought it to our attention. And we are going to hopefully move forward without too much trouble, but I will note for the record that our business this last afternoon included taking up Senate File 4708. We adopted an A1 amendment to that bill. We took testimony on it, and then the committee passed the bill as amended and recommended that it pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Commerce and Consumer Protection. Then the committee took up Senate File 3852. That is the bill that was tabled at the end of the last hearing, and which we will now take up in just a minute. On Senate File 3852, which is my bill, it is the Senate Labor Policy Omnibus Bill. We adopted the A1 amendment. We also adopted the A9 amendment, and we adopted an oral amendment that deleted Section 9 on page 60 of the bill. We also heard three amendments that the committee rejected. That was the A9 amendment. Oh, excuse me, not the A9. That's the wrong one. The A6 amendment was rejected. The A9 was adopted. The A6 was rejected. And then the A10 amendment was divided into two separate amendments, each of which was rejected by the committee. And that is where we left off. So from there, members, unless there's any other procedural matters that I should take up, I think we're going to go ahead and take Senate File 3852 off the table and begin our discussion again. And I will hand the gavel over to Senator Housechild.
Okay, Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, I have the A2 amendment I'd like to offer.
Okay, Senator Marty introduces the A2 amendment.
And I believe the A2 is in our packets.
Great.
And it would delete Section 8 on page 59 and 60 and replace the language in it. This is one that we had a bill that's the one that's in the bill right now was one that came from constituent who works in HR and who wanted to know if it would be possible to use oral testing or saliva mm-hmm. testing for drug tests for employees. He worked in an HR company and wanted to make sure that that could be used instead of a blood test, because for positions where they were hiring people they were testing, they would require a blood test. And that takes like 2 weeks, so the employee couldn't start work for that long. They couldn't have them start work. It's awkward for both of them, and the employee would then have to go to a lab, which for some employees was difficult because they didn't have good transportation or whatever. Anyway, I think the committee, both employers and employees, liked it. And since that time, we've heard from some employers who say they really would like it to be for all testing where they can. where they can use the oral testing, which is apparently as accurate as the blood tests are now. It's much quicker and so on. So what this amendment would do would be virtually the same language, other than instead of saying an employer may elect to comply with the oral fluid testing for employees and job applicants instead of just for job applicants, which is the way the bill was in the past. And we continue the same structure we had in the other bill, and that is that when the job applicant would undergo an oral test, if it turned out to be a positive test or was inconclusive or invalid, which is very small percentage of the time, that the employer job applicant could request a drug or alcohol testing at no cost to the employee, which is a standard protocol that's happened now. And this then says the new paragraph C, though, is that if say I'm an employee, I take the saliva test because they do periodic testing and it's positive or not clear, I would get a retest at the employer's expense. But if that turned out positive and I wanted to get a confirmatory test on my own after that, I'd have to pay for that. I don't know if there are any objections, as I heard from some employers who were saying they would much prefer it to be done this way, where it could happen on all the tests. And I haven't heard from any workers or unions or employers who have problems with this. So if so, I'd be suggesting we expand it to cover it for all the tests. And I'm happy to stand for questions.
Okay. Members, any discussion? Senator Koenig.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Senator Mari. This is a great bill, and sounds like it's been broadened a little bit, even to make it better. So we definitely support it. Thank you.
Senator McKeown.
Mr. Chair, I view this as a friendly amendment. Thank you.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. All right, the amendment is adopted. Further discussion on Senate File 3852 as amended. Okay, seeing none, Senator McKeown, any final thoughts?
No, just to thank you everybody for your time in engaging in discussion over the course of these last weeks, where we heard these bills individually and now today as we took it up in our labor policy omnibus bill. I ask for your support.
Senator Pappas.
That's on. Yeah, Mr. Chairman and Senator McKeown, normally we would go through the bill. I don't know if I missed it, if you did that before.
We did.
Have we, are these, just to, as a reminder, I know we're short on time, so that's one of the issues, but are these all, is everything that we laid over for possible inclusion included in this? This is the chair's suggestion, or are there some things that were not included that were laid over? I think I did have the list at one time. I'm afraid I left it in my office of what's included here.
Chair McKeown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Pappas, yes, we did an extensive walk through this afternoon of each of the sections, each of the articles and sections of the bill, and took a number of different amendments, and we did a lot. It looks like we have some staff who's going to provide you with the information. And all of the bills, I believe, someone will correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe each of the bills that's contained in this labor policy omnibus bill were bills that we have heard in committee, and so they've just been incorporated into this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize. No wonder you're smiling. That must have been when I was presenting a bill in another committee that you did that. No, I'm not asking you to do it again. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Pappas.
Okay, so seeing no other questions, Chair McKeown, do you want to move that Senate File 3852 as amended is recommended to pass to the Senate floor?
So moved, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
All right. Those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The motion passes.
Thank you. All right, members. Next, we have Senate File 4298, which is brought to us by Senator Mitchell. Senator Mitchell, can you hear us all right?
Yes, I have you. Thank you very much.
There you are. We can see you great, and we can also hear you pretty well. Just make sure that you speak slowly enough and loudly enough so that we don't lose you here in the transmission. Senator Mitchell, I understand that you may have an A2 amendment that you'd like us to address first.
Yes, Madam Chair, I do have the A2 amendment.
Senator Mitchell, do you have anything you'd like to let the committee know about the amendment, what it is, what the nature of it is, or is this sort of a technical author's amendment?
So the bill overall, as you can see in front of you, is pretty short. It adds the electric capacity, not the actual chargers, but making sure new residential has the ability to add EV chargers as more people go to EV chargers and more electric vehicles. By putting them in during the building stage, it's fairly inexpensive to even no cost, depending on where you're gonna put your electric box anyway. But if you put it in afterwards, it can be much more expensive. You're talking about rewiring and installation, not on top of what the charger would cost. So this just makes it clear that we are expanding that to all new residential buildings and kind of clarifying, you know, what all that would entail or what would be within that definition.
Thank you, Senator Mitchell. Members, would someone like to move the adoption of the A2 amendment onto Senate File 4298? Senator Pappas moves the adoption of the A2 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, the A2 amendment is adopted. Senator Mitchell, to your bill.
Thank you so much. As I said, you can see in front of you, this is pretty straightforward. It would require electric vehicle ready spaces, capable spaces, or the electric charging ability within our new residential. So again, that doesn't mean that they're having to necessarily put in those units, but that we have the framework as we go forward as a state in Minnesota. I have talked with the electrical unions and things of that nature. And if we do this as we're building, they estimate, again, depending on where the electrical panels get put in, it could be zero. But if it's, just if the panel is somewhere else and just making sure the wiring would be ready to put those in, maybe a couple $100s. But by doing this as we're building, it is much more efficient and makes it much easier for the residents of Minnesota to think about eventually having an electric vehicle, which is an increasing number of our auto sales. So having that in the building code itself and having that readiness would kind of get us ahead of the game.
All right, thank you very much, Senator Mitchell. We have a testifier who is joining us virtually, Carolyn Berninger.
Yes, hi, good evening. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can hear you.
Excellent.
And I think when you start to speak, also your camera will come up as the main screen, so that we'll be able to see you a little bit better. There you are. Great. Thanks for joining us this evening with the Senate Labor Committee. If you'd just please introduce yourself formally for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Yes, thank you, and good evening, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Carolyn Berninger. I'm a public policy manager on the Transportation and Fuels team at the Great Plains Institute, testifying today in support of this bill on behalf of Drive Electric Minnesota. Drive Electric Minnesota is a partnership of automakers and auto dealers, electric utilities and cooperatives, local and state government, corporations and NGOs that are working to electrify transportation in Minnesota. Electric vehicle adoption is already increasing very rapidly. Throughout the state, registrations have increased by almost 750% between 2018 and 2023. And that's expected to continue increasing due to supportive state and federal policies, such as Minnesota's brand new EV rebate program and an updated federal incentive program, also due to improving vehicle technology and availability, decreasing battery prices, bringing down the costs of vehicles, and increasing consumer interest. But in order to support this expected increase in EVs on the roads, we really need more EV charging in Minnesota, and that's particularly true at people's homes, where more than 80% of EV charging occurs today. And as you've just heard, it's particularly important to plan ahead when it comes to including charging capacity at new buildings, as any residences that are built today will remain standing for decades into the future. And so we really need to design buildings today that accommodate the needs of both current and future EV owners to prevent a lack of access to charging from becoming a barrier to EV adoption. And you've also just heard it's very cost-effective compared to retrofitting to include charging capacity at the time of construction. So I think just finally, in addition to kind of future-proofing and keeping costs low, we also believe investing in Minnesota's EV charging capacity will help the state meet its climate and EV adoption goals by making it that much easier for Minnesotan households to make the switch to an EV. So Drive Electric Minnesota supports Senate File 4298, and we thank Senator Mitchell for carrying this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Nick Erickson. Welcome to the Senate Labor Committee. If you'd please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Nick Erickson. I'm Senior Director of Housing Policy for Housing First Minnesota. Our members are the home builders, remodelers, developers who build the places and communities that we all call home. I serve on a variety of tasks and technical advisory groups with the Department of Labor and Industry, including their recent EV tag for multifamily dwellings. We want to begin by thanking Senator Mitchell for the amendment. It did address some of our concerns, but still today we really would prefer that this bill focus on a raceway or conduit-only approach to electric vehicles instead of oversizing the electrical panels. Today, nothing in state law prevents homeowners or property owners from putting these chargers in their homes. However, moving to a conduit-only way is the most cost-effective without the needed cost of oversizing electrical panels. And the reason we are doing this through the legislature is because currently no model building codes do include EV chargers in the base construction standards. I know it's been a long day already in this committee, so I'll wrap it up. I'm available for any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Members, we'll go ahead and move then to discussion. Senator Mitchell, is there anything you'd like to add after the testimony before we begin our discussion of your bill?
No, thank you again for considering this. I think it's in the best interest of Minnesotans to have this smaller upfront charge for something that many people are going to be moving to in the future. I kind of think ahead to save money and also facilitate, you know, the greener Minnesota that we are hoping to have and the carbon footprint that we have been trying to reduce.
Thank you, Senator Mitchell. Yeah, members, Senator Housechild.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could I have Mr. Frentz come back up? Or I think I got your name right. Or excuse me, Erickson.
Erickson.
Sorry, I'm thinking Nick. Anyway.
It's been a long day for everybody.
Okay, so I just want to thank you, Mr. Erickson, for coming back up. I just wanted to clarify your comment. So you were saying that Housing First would prefer a conduit model for construction rather than what's being proposed in the amendment?
Mr. Erickson?
Madam Chair, Senator, yes, that's correct. So a conduit or raceway, whichever term you prefer, they're kind of used interchangeably, would be the biggest cost savings if you talk about retrofitting in the future. Particularly if you have an unfinished basement, and when you move in and then you, of course, finish it a couple of years down the road, the conduit or raceway really does save the most construction costs. It's not invasive at the time of replacement. The bigger charge here would be the oversizing of the electrical system to make it EV capable. So we have three standards already that we're looking at in Minnesota: EV capable, EV ready, and EV installed. This is the lowest of the three. Means there's not a charger there or even an outlet for the charger, but one could be added in the future. However, there is an electrical panel is ready for that in the future. The conduit or raceway only makes it so it's less invasive to install if there is a need to in the future, and then it's then done so by, you know, you add to the electrical panel at that point in time. The cost of that is going to vary based on what is the electrical capacity that that home itself is currently planned for versus what that increased need would be at the time you would add that added capacity. So that's kind of the cost difference. I hope that answers your question.
Well,
Senator Hellstrom?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Erickson. So that with this amendment, are we at the installation ready level, the third tier?
Mr. Erickson?
Senator, I'm sure, yeah, it's, what we're asking for is a fourth tier, which is the conduit only. Okay. So that's a different clarification, but yes, I'm sorry, I live in the building code and land use side, and I know it gets quite confusing with all the similar terms, so this would be a separate standard.
Okay, but, and then, Madam Chair, just one last question.
Yes,
Mr. Erickson, so is Housing First supportive of this bill with the amendment or not?
I'm sorry.
After you, Mr. Erickson.
Senator, we like this version better than the previous one, but we still see that this is added cost that's not necessary, particularly in light of our housing crisis in Minnesota. So right now, the take rate, the adoption rate with new home buyers in Minnesota, we see this very low. The lower you go on the price point scale, so you get anything below, you know, $600,000, the adoption rate falls precipitously. They're very common when you really get into the higher end luxury homes. You get north of $1 million, they're pretty much standard for those buyers, and that's something that they choose. So we do see the gradient is based on the affordability of the home.
Okay, thank you.
Any follow-up, Senator?
Do we know the path? So is this going, where is this going next, Madam Chair?
Yes.
Or maybe Senator Mitchell, I'm not sure.
Yeah, Senator Mitchell, my understanding is that from our committee that your bill would be headed to finance.
Okay.
Did you have any comment in regard to some of the conversation here?
I was told it would probably be laid over.
That it would probably be, certainly could lay it over.
Okay.
Senator Mitchell, we can go ahead and lay it over.
If it needs to go to finance, the note I have on my file is laid over. I apologize.
Thanks, Senator Mitchell. We're just having some discussion about the path. Just a sec.
Madam Chair, members, we're just having discussion about whether or not this would involve rulemaking, and we were looking at the fiscal note that does have some costs to the Office of Administrative Hearings, and I'm not sure if someone is here from the department that could speak to whether or not they need to do some rulemaking to update the rules, but it does have it in the fiscal note, does show a cost, and so I just wanted to bring that up. I don't think that our state government council flagged this necessarily, but it just may be that she didn't see it. So I don't know what you'd like to do at this point. I could certainly check back with her, but you may want, if you want to move forward with the bill. I just want to bring up a couple of those things.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know, but I assume there will be a labor budget bill.
Yes.
Right, so it could be laid over for that.
Yeah, I was wondering the same thing. I think maybe because of the discussion we're having and because of the expectation that you came to the committee with today, Senator Mitchell, we'll go ahead and plan to lay over the bill then, and some discussion can continue about it, and we'll just take it up again as needed. Does that work for you?
Yes, I apologize if that's my error.
No, it could be ours too.
We were told late over, so, but yeah. I'm still new in this, so maybe we missed something.
No, me too. That works. We'll plan to lay it over. But yeah, we'll continue just with our discussion here before we do that. Senator Dornick.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Mitchell, for the bill. Just a couple questions. I know you mentioned about $200. Do we have a better cost? I'm not sure if there's a representative from the electrical in the audience or not, but
If there is not, I have a email from Mr. Snope with the IEEW that I can read, but I don't know if he's there in the audience. I don't want to speak for him if he's there to speak for himself.
Yeah, we don't see him in the audience.
So he said the estimate that he had done himself, and I believe most people know him, so that's why, but obviously with IEEW, so the electrical, that not including overhead or logistics from a contractor, his guess was $200 to $300. That would include a 3/4-inch conduit run from the electrical panel, if the panel was not already installed in the garage, and a junction box at or near the parking location, and about an hour of labor. This would make the parking spot EV charger ready, and then would not include the wire or circuit breaker equipment. That is if it was done while the home was being built. This is my note. Obviously, you know, when you're adding these things in afterwards, it really increases the cost. And that the electrical panel would be more than 90 feet from the parking location. If the electrical panel was in the garage, that cost could be even less, if not zero. As an electrician, I would consider a parking location EV ready if the electrical panel were installed in the garage.
Follow up, Senator Dornick.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Senator Mitchell. I'll probably follow up with him. I got some more questions concerning that, but since we're gonna lay it over, I guess another question is, who's asking for this? Is it just a electrical? Or was it just your idea? Or
Senator Mitchell.
Thank you. So I worked on in the EV space last year because Minnesota was actually starting to get behind in terms of what we had for EV charging, just in general on the highways, or, you know, if we're going to have more electric vehicles in Minnesota and we're going to stay up with the demand, and even for the automakers to get the supply in Minnesota, we had to kind of, because there's a demand, and so you might not get the supply at the auto dealer if you can't show that people are going to be able to charge and you have that infrastructure. So we had already worked on some of this last year with just making sure at the large apartment buildings there was some more opportunities. Along our interstates, we were getting a few more fast chargers and things of that nature. And then working with our advocacy groups and then just hearing from people in general, you know, the next step is the cost to put them in your home, and how, because right now it's almost all retrofitting, that is a bigger cost. So if we want to continue to make this more accessible for not the people in that are $1 million plus homes, but actually normal people who want to get electric vehicles, that by having their homes ready to do that in a less expensive way would be a good step in the right direction.
Senator Dornick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Mitchell. I was wondering if I could have Mr. Erickson come up one more time, if he would. Would that be okay?
Yes. Mr. Erickson.
Madam Chair.
Yes, after you, Senator Dornick.
Thank you, Mr. Erickson. Just a question. If it's only $200, what is your concern with the bill?
Mr. Erickson.
Madam Chair, Senator, it's not necessarily just the $200. There is the issue of upsizing the electrical panel. So if we talk to our members, particularly looking at the smaller, more efficient townhomes, you are going to be needing to oversize the electrical service compared to what's there today. And again, the estimates we base on what is that builder's base electrical, you know, consumption that they're planning for versus what they would need to do to plan for the vehicle. And that's going to change for every builder, but it's, you know, we've heard it's as much as 750 to 1,000 if they have to go up high in terms of output. You know, if you're using natural gas appliances, you're not planning for, you know, electric cooktop, you're not doing, you know, electric water heater, you're going to have a lower electrical need. So that's where you're going to get this wide discrepancy in cost estimates.
Follow up, Senator Dornick.
Madam Chair, thank you. I kind of thought that was probably true, but I didn't know for sure, and just thank you for that information. I will have a final comment at the end, but for now, I'm no more questions.
Okay. Before I go to Senator Grünhagen, I'm wondering if we do have somebody from the Department of Labor and Industry here who could talk about rulemaking potentially. Yes, could you please join us? As long as we're delving in here, might as well get your testimony. Thank you for joining us. And could you please introduce yourself formally for the record? And then my question for you is, I'm wondering if you could speak to us briefly about the need, if there is a need for rulemaking and what that might entail. Thank you.
Yes, Madam Chair, and members of the committee, thank you for allowing me to come and speak this evening. My name is Greg Metz. I am an assistant director at the Department of Labor and Industry in the Construction Codes and Licensing Division, and I'm also the state building official. This would take some rulemaking in order to move this forward. It would basically require a modification to the residential building code and a modification to the Minnesota Electrical Code in order to clarify the scoping requirements for this.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Okay. Senator Grünhagen.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I, you know, I tend to agree with the concerns that have been shared here in terms of the mandate. And, you know, the other thing I'll guarantee you, if we mandate it as government, the price is going to double and triple in a short period of time. Okay? That's just the way it works. When government mandates, you have to have something. The people who produce it increase the cost. It's that simple. You know, if people want this, they can choose to have it. And, you know, I already brought up here at the committee that in the housing committee last year, the average home to build in the state of Minnesota is $523,000. I'm sure it's higher now based on all the regulations we passed. That's over $150,000 to $200,000 higher than the neighboring 10 states. I think South Dakota builds the same home is $350,000. Iowa's $370,000. I've gone over this so many times I got it memorized. Even Michigan's $381,000 if I remember right, and Illinois is Illinois is $381,000, Michigan's $341,000. So this is just another step in the wrong direction. We need zoning, we need a referee, but again, here we're putting the referee in the huddle, calling the plays, and driving up the cost of construction. And the other thing to understand, I think EV sales have maxed out. Ford has lost billions of dollars, they're pulling back, other companies are pulling back, and the Wall Street Journal published an article you can find on the internet. It says electric cars release more toxic emissions than gas-powered vehicles and are worse for the environment, study warns. They weigh 30% more than gas cars on average, causing tires to wear out faster. The tire tread releases toxic particles 400 times greater than exhaust emissions. So you can read the article. So we're going down a path of more pollution, not less, and on top of that, we're going to mandate something that's going to continue to grow the cost of construction. I just think it's the wrong direction, and I hope that Senator Mitchell will reconsider this bill. If somebody wants to put it in, just like was testified, they can put it in. We don't have to mandate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Grünhagen.
Any further discussion? Members, questions, discussion? Senator Dornick, and I also have a comment, and then I have some information about the track that we're going to do. Would you like to hear that before you have your final comment?
Yeah, sure. That'd be fine.
And we'll also then hear from Senator Mitchell as well. Senator Mitchell, just so you're aware, we've been having further discussion about the path of your bill. We'd like to go ahead and dual track it. We can always add it to our budget omnibus bill later from this committee, but we also thought we could send it to State Gov. We know that you are the vice chair of that committee, and so we're going to go ahead and just dual track it. Is that okay with you?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, very good. So that's our plan for the bill. We'll go ahead and move after we're ready. You know, I guess I could say my, I just wanted to note that Senator Mitchell, your bill is really timely because just this morning as I was getting up, I heard Minnesota Public Radio and they were talking about how two-thirds of cars manufactured are going to have plug-ins by 2032. And I thought of your bill and I thought, you know, we are just about to hear a bill that is going to help get us ready for that. So thanks for bringing your bill. I think it's great. Yeah, with that, Senator Dornick, do you have a comment? And then we'll go to Senator Mitchell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So just the comment is, I'm concerned with the mandates too and the housing prices. And my concern is just continuing to get these houses out of reach of the homeowners, and it's a thrill. I mentioned that last time I talked about the increase on another bill. What a thrill to be involved in that building process and to watch your house being built. And with the cost, we're not sure of the cost. I'm a little concerned. I need to hear more about the cost, and so I'll follow up with that. And then my other concern is I'm just concerned with our grid and the power it's going to take to run all these. So those are some of my concerns. Senator Mitchell, thanks for bringing the bill forward, though, and you know, we will continue to go through some of these and navigate through this. But it's definitely, electric cars are here, and they're going to continue to be more of them. I just want to be careful how we move through this. And again, I like the choice that the homeowner can choose, and the ones that can afford it are probably going to do it, and the ones that maybe aren't tight on their budget, it's hard when you're going through a budget of a house, and when you just keep adding little things at the end, it's a lot of money. And so it's just important to make sure we don't keep these houses any more out of reach than they already are. Thank you, Madam.
Thank you, Senator Dornick. Senator Mitchell, would you like to leave us with the last word before we move your bill?
Yes, thank you all for your consideration this evening. You know, I understand that this adds a little bit of a cost to a home. You know, part of the reason that we have higher costs in Minnesota is because we also have an almost, what I would say, catastrophic housing shortage of over 100,000 units, something that some of us are working together on in different bills to address. And so sometimes, so a part of our problem is supply and demand, which we're hoping to work on a separate way to hopefully get those prices down. But this will save people a lot of money up front by doing it the correct way. These sales are going up exponentially, and EV cars are more environmental. That is just factual. And there have been a lot of movement, especially now. It used to be more affluent people getting them, but now this is the preferred car for a lot of our you know, middle income families, even lower income, because over the life of the car, you're going to just save so much money on gas. So this is a way that we're ultimately helping our families spend a little bit up front, but be able to save a lot of money in the long run in a couple different ways, both by being able to access the car and save the money on the gas, but also not have to do all the retrofitting, and then continue the work we've done in Minnesota to be mindful of protecting our environment. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Mitchell. Would someone like to move that Senate File 4298 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to state and local government and veterans? Senator Pappas makes that motion. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
No.
The motion carries. Thank you very much, Senator Mitchell. Have a good
Thank
night.
Thank you. Have a great night.
Next on our agenda, we have Senate File 4593. Brought to us by Senator Zhang. Welcome to the Senate Labor Committee.
Good evening, members. Well, members, Minnesota faces a substantial shortage of affordable housing. More than 600,000 Minnesotans are struggling to afford their homes. We as a state have been stepping up to finance new affordable housing projects through direct grants and tax incentive programs. Unfortunately, much of this public money has been channeled to problem contractors that build new housing projects on the backs of vulnerable workers. Members, there have been documented widespread use of irresponsible contractors on TIF and LIHTC-funded affordable housing projects, two major sources of public housing financing. Research from the North Star Policy Action Report found evidence that since 2016, workers on 25 projects receiving $31 million in LIHTC funding were potentially at risk of exploitation by problem contractors. Further, since 2018, workers in 14 projects that received approximately $53 million in TIF subsidies were potentially at risk of exploitation by problem contractors. There are problem contractors that consistently show up on publicly subsidized projects despite a pattern of worker abuse. Government investigation have found that one of these contractors deprived workers of more than $126,000 in wages, violated child labor laws, misclassified workers, and submitted false and misleading information during the course of an investigation. We need to address our housing shortages through expanded tax incentives and direct public financing, but we cannot allow public dollars to fund worker exploitation. We can prevent exploitation by implementing robust labor standards on grant and tax incentive programs. That is what Senate File 4593 provides. This bill provides a solution to the specific issue highlighted by providing family-sustaining wages, transparency, responsible contractor standard, and developer accountability. With this bill, first, it extends the prevailing wage standards to LIHTC projects over 10 units, minimizing the risk of irresponsible conduct on publicly financed projects. A prevailing wage requirement reduces the risk of wage theft and exploitation by establishing a family-sustaining wage requirement and ensuring fair competition for local contractors. Second, this bill increases transparency by providing a contractor standard and developer accountability. In application, it will cover all types of publicly subsidized projects through MHFAs, tax programs, ensuring high road standards across different loan types. In terms of disclosure, this bill ensures that project owners disclose past incidences of wage theft, human trafficking, misclassification fraud, child labor, and workplace safety violations. Increasing information is a powerful tool, and having to report will dissuade developers from using problem contractors. Third, this bill institutes a responsible contractor standard, ensuring that irresponsible contracts that cheat workers or engage in other serious misconduct will not be allowed on taxpayer-funded housing projects. Finally, this bill provides developer accountability, whereby a developer that consistently allows wage theft to occur on their projects should be held accountable and subject to potential disqualification in future tax-subsidized opportunities. And members, this bill is warranted and has been tailored to address this specific problem that is unfortunately occurring here in Minnesota. Thank you. And I think we also have an A4 amendment.
Yeah. Thank you,
maybe
Senator.
I could go over the amendment.
Yes, please go ahead.
Yeah, so, in discussions with MHFA and Dolly, we were trying to work out the responsibilities of each department. And so that one portion of this amendment seeks to do that, to clarify that the Department of Labor will be the one reviewing the plans if there were to be a problem contractor that is, needing to go through that review process before being awarded the funding in the future. And so that's one portion. And the other portion is deleting the section on right of action in district court. And that provision is being removed.
Okay.
Yeah. And with that, I also have two testifiers that have been working really, really long and hard on this piece of legislation.
Great. Thank you very much, Senator. Let's go ahead and address the A4 amendment, if we could. Members, would someone please offer or move the adoption of the A4 amendment? Senator Kupak makes that motion. All in favor of adopting the A4, please say aye. Aye. Any opposed? All right, the A4 is adopted. And first we have Jake Schweitzer. Hello, welcome to the Senate Labor Committee. Could you please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony?
Thank you, Chair McEwen, members of the committee. My name is Jake Schweitzer, and I am the Executive Director of North Star Policy Action. We're a think tank that promotes data-driven solutions to help working Minnesotans thrive. I'm here to speak in favor of Senate File 4593 today. Senator Zhang laid out the data showing Minnesota's housing crisis, as well as the state's response to it. Now, unfortunately, two of the largest sources of public financing for affordable housing, low-income housing tax credits, or LIHTC, and tax increment financing, or TIF, are lacking in important safeguards for workers. And these safeguards are important because wage theft and exploitation are persistent problems in the multifamily housing construction industry. In November, North Star Policy Action released our report called Subsidizing Abuse. This report named contractors that have been charged with or face allegations of exploitation, according to interviews with workers and industry experts. We identified housing developments that have received funding from LIHTC and TIF and are still employing the problem contractors that we named. We found that since 2016, workers on 25 projects that received approximately $31 million in LIHTC funding were at risk of exploitation by problem contractors. And since 2018, workers on 14 projects that received approximately $53 million in TIF subsidies were also at risk. In total, over $84 million in taxpayer subsidies have gone to projects employing contractors with proven or alleged labor violations. And that's just what we could find in a short period of time putting this report together. And when we say things like labor violations, worker exploitation, wage theft, it can sound like a lot of legalese, very 30,000 feet. But what we're really talking about here in our report, we're talking about contractors who have refused to pay their workers and offered them illegal drugs instead, or used child labor, or threatened to fire a woman for reporting sexual assault on the job, or covering up serious workplace injuries. If you're a contractor who's guilty of abuses like these, you shouldn't be working on publicly subsidized projects. It's as simple as that. And developers need to be held responsible for the contractors that they hire. And that's why this bill is so important. Expanding prevailing wage requirements to LIHTC projects will protect workers on those job sets, on those job sites and across the industry from depressed wages. Increasing transparency of who's actually working on these projects will make it harder for bad actors to avoid accountability through layers of subcontractors. And increasing developer accountability will mean project owners can't shirk responsibility for abuses on their projects while collecting all the profits. So thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we have Lucas Franco. If you'd please introduce yourself formally for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good evening. Thank you, Chair McEwen and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Lucas Franco. I'm here on behalf of Leuna, Minnesota in North Dakota, a union of more than 14,000 proud men and women who build our state's critical infrastructure. I'm here to speak in favor of Senate File 4593. As we've heard, there continues to be a widespread shortage of affordable housing in our state. Even many of our members who earn good family-sustaining wages face challenges renting or buying a home. And thankfully, this body and other units of government have really stepped up to the challenge to provide critical financial assistance to meet housing needs here in Minnesota. Yet, as the North Star Policy Action Report revealed, too much of this public money is channeled to problem contractors that are building new housing projects on the backs of vulnerable workers. We need to build more housing, but we can't let public dollars fund low-road contracting practices and fuel worker exploitation. This bill will ensure the responsible use of taxpayer money by implementing robust labor standards on grant and tax incentive programs. It does this in three important ways. Number one, the bill expands prevailing wage coverage on LIHTC projects. Prevailing wage policies protect construction workers from wage theft and exploitation and ensure that responsible local contractors are not put out of work by unfair competition. It's important to note that a recent peer-reviewed research report disputes the 10 to 15% cost impact cited in a letter submitted to this committee. The authors of this recent analysis found that at most there's a very modest cost impact on housing projects specifically. Second, the bill will prevent the use of problem contractors on all types of MHFA-funded projects by applying and ultimately extending Minnesota's responsible contractor law. Third, the bill closes the developer accountability gap by ensuring that developers take accountability for what occurs on their projects. This accountability is incredibly vital, and this bill helps ensure accountability throughout the housing development supply chain, which is really the only way that we believe that we can stop a pattern of problem contractors performing work on publicly financed projects. In summary, this bill will break the pattern of problem contractors working on publicly subsidized projects. It will ensure that public money supports contractors that play by the rules, that pay their workers family-sustaining wages. Thank you for your time and consideration of this bill.
Thank you for your testimony. We're going to move to member discussion. Anything that you'd like to add, Senator Zhang, before we do that?
I certainly hope that this bill would receive favorable consideration and pass. It's, you know, we don't want to build homes, publicly financed homes, you know, on the backs of exploited workers. And I hope that we can get this through. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, discussion. Yes, Senator Umu Verbaten.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Zhang. I love this bill. I would love to sign on, and I served on the employer misclassification task force that the Attorney General put together. This came up in a number of our discussions. I think it's just so important. If you are doing prevailing wage, you have to submit that payroll, and that itself is such a check on these employers that are bad actors and are trying to skirt the process, exploit workers and wages, and bring down costs. And we heard that actually directly from business owners, right? Law-abiding business owners who are trying to do the right thing and can't compete with these bad actors. So I'm so excited to see it. Would love to be on your bill.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Senator Grünhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, thanks for your testimony. I probably have some concerns about this bill. And the prevailing wage, according to the input we've had, is going to drive up the cost exponentially on the so-called low-income housing. So in my opinion, you're going to get less low-income housing, and it's going to cost more. And I can't believe we don't have laws on the books that don't address some of the concerns that were brought up about bad actors. We all want to address bad actors, okay? But I don't know if this is the right way to do it. You know, there is a scientific law. It's called the, for every action, there's a reaction, okay? So, you know, we pass this law, there's going to be a reaction. And the reaction is less low-income housing is going to be built, in my opinion, and the cost is going to be higher. So, you know, last bill we had a testimony that there's 100,000 house shortage. Well, why not make it 200,000? I mean, we just seem to be going in the wrong direction. The other thing, there is another economic law. It's called the law of diminishing returns. You can just keep passing law after law after law after law. Of course, if we don't enforce them, it doesn't really help. And like I said before, I can't believe we don't have laws to address bad actors in this state with the number of laws we passed over the last decade or more. So I just think it's another step in the wrong direction. I know you mean well, but I do think it's going to increase cost and reduce availability of low-income housing. So those are my concerns. And again, I can't believe this bill alone is going to solve all these problems. I do believe it's going to drive up the cost. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator. Any further discussion? All right. Not seeing any. I also am a huge fan of this bill. I love it. Thank you very much for bringing it. Our path is to move it to finance next, is our understanding. Would you like to add any last thoughts before we move your bill?
No, I really appreciate the discussion. I think, to Senator Grunhagen's point, I feel uncomfortable equating, a cost to workers' exploitation. I think that's what we're trying to address here. I wouldn't have brought it if there wasn't an issue. And I don't think that this alone would solve it, but I think it would help push the needle in the right direction and protecting workers. And so I hope I can get your support for this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Umar Verbaten, would you please move that Senate File 4593 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance?
Yes, Madam Chair, so moved.
All right, members on that motion, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
No.
All right, the motion is adopted.
Thank you.
Thank you. And lastly, on our agenda for this evening, we have Senate File 3197 brought to us by Senator Housechild. Welcome to your committee, Senator. I believe you have an A1 amendment. Would you like to take care of that first?
I do, Madam Chair, yes.
And it is an author's amendment.
It is, and do you want me to... I guess I just want to say that there's been a concern that was brought to me. Yes, this amendment is a delete-all and does change the bill. So, this hearing hopefully will give everybody an opportunity to talk about the bill clearly. But yeah, it is a delete-all from the original bill.
Very good. Members, Senator Housechild moves the adoption of the A1 amendment, which is a delete all author's amendment. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, the A1 amendment is adopted. Senator, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Minnesota has two primary statutes that cover the application of our prevailing wage laws. The first is 177.42, which states that projects funded in whole or in part by state funds must pay the prevailing wage. The second is 116J.871, which states, among other things, that local projects that receive a reduction, credit, or abatement of a tax assessed under Chapter 297A, must pay prevailing wages if it is for economic development purposes. What's missing from these two things, or at least what's unclear, is that the application of prevailing wage to local government projects that receive an exemption from the sales tax on construction materials. This amendment will ensure that these projects are covering under prevailing wage in a way that is consistent with similar projects that get state bonding or get tax credits for economic development purposes. So it's really just sort of a gap that we found that when state dollars are involved, there should be, or some sort of tax, state tax credit, that there should be prevailing wages.
Very good. Thank you, Senator Housechild. And we have Kyle Makarios here to offer some testimony. Welcome to the Senate Labor Committee this evening. If you'd please introduce yourself formally for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm Kyle Makarios here on behalf of the Minnesota State Building and Construction Trades Council. I'm here just to answer any questions you or the committee may have.
Very good, thank you. Before we move to discussion, any thing you'd like to add? Okay, great. Members, questions or discussion on Senate File 3197 as amended? Senator Grunhagen?
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, you know, I served on the school board for 16 years, right? We did lots of projects, and we didn't need this prevailing wage to get good results. We simply used, a firm, I'm trying to think of the name right offhand, but maybe I shouldn't say it anyway, but, and they just made sure everything was done right. So if we start applying to school districts, this bill, we're just gonna drive up the cost of construction. And I tell you what, I was on 16 years, we had some older buildings, we had to do numerous updates, and we never had a single problem because we had a general contractor over it that was accountable to us, and we didn't pay the final bill until things were up to our satisfaction and inspected. So I, you know, sometimes I feel like a lone wolf up here. I mean, we just don't need to drive up the cost anymore. And yet that's what we do. Same thing with the city. I work closely with our city council, our county, on different projects with the school district. We had inspectors, we had people looking things over. And again, we never paid out until it was up to satisfaction and passed inspection. So I don't know. It just, it's another step driving up, government driving up the cost. And I guess I have a concern about that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Grunhagen. Members, any further comment? Yes, Senator Dornick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I was just curious of the path of the bill. Where is it going next, or what is the...
When we are done with discussion, we are going to plan to pass it out and re-refer it to taxes.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess the only little critique I have is just, again, the speed of legislations many times and having to continue to look up on the website to see what things are being posted. This was posted at 7:20, and I appreciate Mr. Macario's coming to my office last night ahead and going through the bill, so thank you for that. So again, it's just a lot of stuff and trying to simulate it and work through some of this. This was a short one, so I appreciate that. But some of the stuff that's long, and trying to process it. I know many times we do an amendment and the thought is, well, we didn't have time to look at it. So just that, I just appreciate when I get a heads up, or we get a heads up, and have a little time, more time to go through things. So, with that, Madam Chair, that's all I have. Thank you.
Yes, Senator Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I suppose, Minnesota Chamber's not here, but several years ago when I applied for their support, one of the questions had to do with prevailing wage in the state of Minnesota. And it was several years ago. And anyway, we at that time, they said we were the fourth highest in the nation on prevailing wage. So I just think we're at the top end, and it just is gonna increase costs without a lot of results out of it, to tell you the truth. And again, I spent 16 years working with my local community, county, city, school board, and we just didn't have that problem. So thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Kubek. I'm sorry, after you. Yes, of course. Senator Housechild.
So thank you, Madam Chair, and members, and Senator Grunhagen, specifically with the two comments. First of all, I want to be very clear that this has nothing to do with inspections or how quickly a project gets done or all of those things. This is about paying the workers for the job when state money or state credits are involved, and frankly, a loophole that we found in the fact that when state money is involved,
we were missing one aspect of that. The second thing is, what benefit are we getting out of being the fourth highest prevailing wage? Well, the benefit we're getting is families taking money home to feed their kids, strong middle-class jobs, mm-hmm. a great diverse economy, a strong construction economy. I mean, I'm proud that we're number four. Maybe someday we can be number one. But the idea that that's a bad sign, I just, certainly there are things we can do to address the costs of construction, but paying workers is not one of them.
Thank you, Senator. I'm going to go to Senator Kubek. Did you still have something?
Yeah, I just had a quick question. Thank you, Madam Chair. So just in terms of, is this applying to projects for the future, or does this encompass things that are underway and not ground broken yet? Just curious what the time is on that.
Thanks. Senator Housechild.
Just looking forward. Senator Kubek, just looking forward.
Okay. Any follow-up? No? Okay. Did you have anything that you wanted to add briefly, Senator Grunhagen?
Yeah, just in response, you know, if government would be reasonable in cost, I think we would all be better off. It is, remember, government is an expense. And the thing is that to the private sector. And when that expense is excessive, as I've demonstrated in the past, the cost of all our necessities go up, and it makes it harder, especially for people who want to experience the American dream who come here as immigrants. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Members, any last comments before we move forward with Senator Housechild's bill? I'll go to Senator Housechild. Do you have any final comments? Your last comments
piece,
almost
Madam
felt
Chair.
Like final yep. comments, but yep. did you have anything else you'd like to add?
I'm okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Absolutely. Thank you for bringing this bill. I'm really glad to see us closing this loophole. I firmly believe that any time, especially when we're using public money, that we owe it to workers to be paying them well. So thank you for bringing this bill. Members, would someone like to move, Senator Housechild, would you like to move that Senate File 3197 as amended be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Taxes?
Yes, Madam Chair.
On that motion, members, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, the motion carries. Thank you very much, members, for staying late. Appreciate all of you very much, and our audience as well, for sticking around to answer questions and participate in our hearing today. With that, the Senate Labor Committee is adjourned.